rub your stomach, and many times the tummy would go away. But God forbid, if somebody had appendicitis, you know, because appendicitis causes bellyache too, like anything else. And you put that stuff on there, you know, then the patient is cooked. You can have a ruptured appendix.
Does that ever happen?
Oh yeah, it happened once in a while. And then they would say, well, we tried everything, but the patient died. See, but they didn't know that it was appendicitis because they didn't have any autopsy, you know, trying out why he died.
Yeah.
So they would say, well, that's God's will, you know. Mm. They would say, de los cielos, means from heaven. That was, it's already written up above that he's supposed to live only so many years, see? Mm. So that was destiny, they call it destiny.
Uh-huh.
And, but I said, for the most part, these things, this work. But if you had a cut in your foot, you know, because we used to walk barefoot, and sometimes the glass could. So we come home and they take a bunch of spider webs. You know, you see a lot of spider webs in little corners. Take a bunch of that and put it over the cut, bandage it up, and the thing will heal. See, that another source of penicillin. Who knows? Spider webs.
Now, I heard that there were some hermanas that would remember these home remedies and stuff like this.
Well, I remember them.
Were there a lot of them, or like, what did they mean to the community? Like,
what?
These hermanas, were there just a few, or were there
many?
Oh,
no, no, I'll tell you, these home remedies used to be practiced by everybody, you know, just like you have here a first aid kit, you know, you got your aspirin, you got your methylate, you got your penicillin, and so on. They didn't know these things.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't have potatoes.
Yeah.
and then they had this spider web. You go in the corner, you just pick a whole bunch of and then put it on your cut, and then bandage it up, bingo.
You don't need a doctor for that.
And you don't need a doctor then. and these hermanas, these old ladies that used to, some of them were practicing midwives, because the women would have their babies, there were no hospitals, you see, have the babies at home.
Mm-hmm.
And if the labor was difficult, you know, the baby wasn't coming out as it should, the midwife would take a shofar, you know, a trumpet, and blow it real hard into the mother's ear. And the sound of that is supposed to scare the baby into coming out. That's a fact.
Boy, that's a...
I mean, that's how they used to do it. Sometimes, of course, the sound didn't penetrate to the baby, you know?
Uh-huh.
And sometimes it would be mortality, you know? The mother would die from exhaustion, or the baby stuck in there, just couldn't come out because it's too big for the passage, you see? And... You know, here, for instance, kids, when they go to school, they have inoculations, you know.
Yeah.
DPT, and against this, against that, against smallpox, and so on.
Yeah.
Over there, there's nothing like that. You know, kids, they acquired immunity because they used to live close to nature. You know, they used to walk in the rain and the mud, and barefooted, and so on. They come home drenched from the rain, and they won't catch any colds. For the most part, you know, here you can get your big toe in the breeze where you come down with pneumonia, and over there you can walk bare, so to speak, and cold weather and rain and everything, nothing happens to you.
Why?
And no inoculations. We didn't have anything like that.
Yeah, like when a lot of the Rogers leaves, when they came to America, a lot would get sick.
You know why? Well, the change of environment, they had to wear shoes and all that. And over there, for instance, if you came down with measles, then they could, they used to believe in the, in certain, I don't know what they call it, but anyway, they used to hang a blue stone over your face, just tied around your forehead and just dangling. You see, and that was to keep the evil spirits away. Or they would have a little tiny hand made of blue beads, also as protection.
against the evil. There's a lot against the evil spirit.
It's still common there, you know, they believe a great deal. Even some of our people do that. Like, for instance, to give you an idea that, for instance, if there were some apples, oranges in the house, you know, especially among the best, when there were those that were poor, they would take the apple if it was halfway spoiled, you know. Here we throw it away, right?
Yeah.
Over there they cut off the part that's overripe.
Yeah.
And then the rest, they would eat it. Cut it up. Here you take a piece. You know, distribute, because most of the families, you know, they were large families, 8, 10, 12 kids, and you got to feed all this. So nothing was thrown away. But if, for instance, if your mother wanted to give you a piece of toast, so she would toss it over the urn, you know, with charcoal. Oh, she turned around to do something else, and then by the time she came back, the thing was black, you know, burned. And so what she do? She hate to throw burnt bread away because she couldn't afford to throw.
Yeah.
So she doctored up. She put a little olive oil, put a little salt and pepper, and said, here. And if he objects, he says, no, he says, you eat it, because if you eat burnt bread with olive oil, someday you're going to be chacham, you're going to be a rabbi.
That's a little superstition. See,
it worked. I know, it worked for me. And I couldn't say no. She said, that's all there is. You throw it away, you go hungry, and then you never become a rabbi. So whether I like it or not, I ate it.
Was it a rabbi who's looked up?
Oh, yeah, the rabbi is the grand,
most
he was the grandee, sure. He was nice, just like the, yeah, the rabbi came back. We all stand in attention. Good morning, rabbi, shalom, rabbi, you know, all that. Oh, he was revered, you know, because he was the brains of the community. And then besides being a religious leader, see, he was next to God, he came. And anything he said, that was it, that was the law. And anyway, coming, and then it came to this question of marriage, you know?
Yeah.
Marriages. As I told you, the average family, large family, you know, 8, 10, 12, and so on. And if a woman, for instance, gave birth to a girl, then there was an atmosphere of disappointment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and hardly any celebration. And the mother would usually have a sense of guilt, you know, as if it were her fault that she presented the husband with a girl instead of a boy. You know, everybody would be hushed because it was a girl. You're not supposed to celebrate. Big deal. And the reason was because, especially if there are other girls in the family, you know, then the person says, oh my God, another girl. You know why? Because he would start thinking, how is he going to marry off these girls? Because the custom was, when a girl became of marriageable age, the father, the family would have to give a dowry, or dota, D-O-T-A, to the groom. And if he didn't have money, that girl can be beautiful and intelligent and everything, and she could become a spinster. You know, go through life without getting married, because the father didn't have
the money.
Wow. You know, either to set him up in little business or, you know, help him out and so on. Because that was, and here, of course, we don't have those things. Here you look at the girl, boy, she's beautiful. She's a blonde.
That's
I say, I'll marry her. Take her to Las Vegas. And so it was really catastrophic, you know, to have two, three or four girls in the family, and the family happened to be poor. From that standpoint. Now, for instance, in our family, you know, there were four girls. And of course, my father, he couldn't afford this dowry and stuff like that. You know, this custom is prevalent through the whole Mediterranean countries. You take in Greece, in Turkey, Arab countries, even in Spain. La dota, they call it. Yeah, la dota.
What la dota is that Spanish?
Dota, yeah, D-O-T-A. That's a dowry. And these girls, of course, you know, from the age They start learning how to sew and embroider, you know, from about the age of 10. Hmm. And they keep, and they have to, for eventual marriage, when they're about 17, 18, and so on. Uh-huh. And the girl that, if she turns, if she doesn't get married by, when she's about 22, 23, then the mother starts
worrying,
because 23, my gosh, she, you know, right away they think that she's going to be an old maid. Mm-hmm. And here, of course, 23, 24, they just, nice. Yeah. And so these girls would learn how to sew and how to embroider from early age, because they have to start getting ready and get married, because then they would have to display everything that they sew by hand. You know, it's quite a strain on the eye. Every day they put in hours and hours.
Yeah.
So they have they make everything from quilts to pillowcases to tablecloths to underwear and you name it.
Yeah.
Dresses and when it comes to the time of the marriage, all that would be displayed on the walls of a special room in the house. See?
Oh yeah.
Just like an exhibit. You know, and relatives would come and look, say, oh my God, look at this beautiful, look at the embroidery. And of course the girl and the mother would feel very proud, you know, that her daughter was so accomplished, and everybody is, those are the kind of things you can't buy in the shop.
Yeah.
You gotta do it at home.
Yeah.
And it takes, they keep sewing there for about 7, 8, 10 years to get ready for the wedding. Hmm. And of course, you know, there's no, there's the question of dating was out of the question. You couldn't date a, girls couldn't date boys or boys with girls. And usually these marriages, you know, your country, they were arranged by the parents. You know, you have a daughter and I have a boy, and I say, Aaron, you have boy, he's very industrious, he's going to school and he's learning a trade. How about my daughter? You know, my daughter is very accomplished, she knows how to cook, she knows how to sew. Okay, okay, it's a deal. So, without the boy and the girl knowing anything about it, see, the parents, they make the whole deal, they shake hands, and that's a contract. And then, of course, comes the first step is to get engaged, you see. So then the one family goes to visit the other, and they bring the girl along, see, to meet the boy. So they meet in there, and then they, and the, let's say, they go to the girl's house, and then, of course, the mother knows that the girl, that the father of the boy is coming with a whole mishpacha, you know, hope to visit them, you see, official. So this is the first time the boy will have a chance to see the girl, you know, that he's going to get engaged. He doesn't know what that she looks like. whether she's toothless or what. So anyway, so they all sit around, you know, and then the mother of the girl gives a tray, silver tray, to the girl with glasses of water and then sweet, you know, homemade sweet, like marmalade, you know. And she's supposed to go around and you take a teaspoon of the marmalade, and then you wish her good luck and so on. You say, novia means may you become a bride. And the girl, you know, starts to blush, and she keeps her head down, you know, bashful type, and she doesn't say anything. She just
acknowledges it.
Yeah, with her head, you know, she just, what does she do with her head?
Bowser,
yeah. And then she goes to the next guest. Same thing, well, we hope one of these days we'll be at your wedding and so on. And the poor thing starts blushing more, you know. And then when it comes to the boy, you know, he takes a spoon and doesn't say anything because he's also bashful. He doesn't say, hi, honey. He can't say that because that's the custom, you know. So you take, he takes the teaspoon of this marmalade, eats it, and by the time, you know, her blushing, she's just red as a tomato, you know, from blushing.
Uh-huh.
And the blush doesn't go away for the rest of the day, you know what I mean?
Why?
And anyway, they serve all this homemade sweets and so on.
I heard that that sometimes the boy would live with the girl's family and the girl would live with the boy's family. Did you ever hear about that? In any cases? They would live with different families
not in Rhodes, anyway. Uh-huh. Not in Rhodes, no.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, and then after this initial visit, you know, the boy, I guess, satisfied with the girl. You see, for the first time, the girl satisfied with the boy, because after they go home, you know, then the mother will ask the girl, "Well, how did you like the boy?" "I think she is very nice." And the boy, when he gets home, asked by the father, "Well, how did you like the girl?" "Yeah, she's okay." That's all, see? And if they say no, she's going to be for you.
You know, I don't have a choice anyway.
No, it's all right. Well, anyway, they want to show that, you know, he's considering.
Yeah.
Anyway, then the next stage is the exchange gift, you see? The mother of the girl will send a tray of sweets, homemade sweets, those almonds, you know, which are made with sugar on the outside. You've seen them, these almonds in different colors. Sweet on the outside,
oh,
they have sugary.
Yeah.
And then then they'll send maybe a gold ring in the tray, see, with all the sweets. They take them to the boy, to his home. And then the mother of the boy sends the tray back with a bracelet and sweets again and so on. Reciprocates, you see?
Uh-huh.
So it means this is it. And then comes the big deal, and that's the engagement party.
Uh-huh.
So they bring in violinists and the guitarists and so on. Come on, they stage a party.
Was it Turkish music they used?
Yeah, Turkish music.
And also Sephardic folk
music? Sephardic, yeah, that's right. Sephardic and Spanish, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And Sephardic, and then the Jewish, the Hebrew. So then all the relatives would be invited, you know, like an open house, see,
uh-huh.
From both sides, and then the musicians would be there and start playing Sephardic songs, Hebrew songs, and all that. And then would come the rabbi. And it would be a ritual, like a religious ritual.
Uh-huh.
So the boy and girl would stand up, and then the rabbis would read the decree. They're getting engaged, and then he would make certain prayers, you know, recite certain prayers. And after the whole thing is over, then they start kissing the girl, you know. Not the boy, he couldn't kiss the girl yet.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He would just shake her hand, and and she...
I mean, they couldn't kiss at that time.
No. And just congratulate each other, and then of course the father and mother on his side hug the boy and hug the girl,
mm-hmm.
and wish him a long life and so on and so forth. And then they the boy would be allowed to sit next to the girl and couldn't hold hands, but that's all.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't put his arm around her because that's against the rules.
How many weddings did you go to in Russia?
Huh? Oh, yeah, you know, I had relatives there and so on. My father would take me. My aunts, family, and uncles.
Would they,
and so
would they be with a lot of people?
There would be, say, about 30 people, something like that. And then some of them would go, others would come, you know, like enough, because they couldn't accommodate everybody.
Uh-huh, right.
And then from the time the engagement is over, and then they would set a date for the wedding, you know, maybe 6 months ahead. Between the engagement and the wedding, the girl could not date the boy unless the mother of the girl went along. She was chaperone, and they couldn't kiss, you know. And maybe they go to the beach.
And the mother would go along.
Yeah, every time. No, she couldn't keep her eyes off the girl, off the couple, you know. They might try to kiss each other or something. I know it sounds funny here, especially in this day and age here.
Oh, yeah.
Either they go out on a day, they come back, they come home 3 o'clock, God knows where they were. And anyway, and then would come the wedding day, you know. So we get married in the synagogue and all the festivities and so on. Incidentally, the wedding would start, the feast would start, would continue for 7 days in the home, you know. But and every day was just like a Roman holiday, you know, eat and drink and eat and drink and music and dance and all that. And the friends and relatives would be coming, you know.
Would it start on a Saturday or a Friday or it didn't matter?
No, not... it was usually a Sunday. It wasn't, you couldn't get married on a Saturday.
Oh, yeah?
Either Friday morning or a Sunday. And so they could have music and so on for 7 full days. I mean, that was the... that was the custom. It was a religious custom, you know? And the husband, the new husband, the bridegroom, would sit together, and he was in his best, you know, handmade vest and so on. very elaborate. And because there was no such thing as honeymoon, you know, that was their honeymoon, staying close together. And then the first night, you know, the first night of wedded bliss, you know, husband and wife, you know, newly married, go to bed and so on. And the mother would lock the door. The girl's mother, and then next morning, the mother had to go to the to inspect the bed to make sure there was blood there, which is a sign of virginity.
Yeah.
You know, but if there's no blood, then there's something wrong. The girl must sneaked out someplace, you know, before the marriage, and that was
that never happened, though.
Never. So when they went there, this was a sort of a routine checkup. You saw the blood, then. And then the mother would kiss the girl and tell the boys, the bridegroom's parents, everything is fine. In other words, she checked and checked out fine.
That's really something.
Huh?
That's really something.
Yeah, so, and then after they came, see, they would walk. Many times they would walk from the house to the synagogue for the wedding. Sometimes if they could afford it, they would hire a carroza, that means a carriage, to take them to the... and if, and when they left the house, you know, they would throw coins, you know, the parents over them. See, you know, how we do here with rice?
Yeah.
They would... there they would throw almonds, you know, the...
Sweet almonds?
The sweet almonds, you know, covered with a coating of sugary stuff, gray, yellow and green and red and all that, and mixed up with Turkish coins, which would be worth about a quarter of a penny each. So they would throw it, and then all the kids, you know, grab the coins and the sweets from the street, you see, and that was supposed to be a sign of plenty in the life, you know, just like they do rice here, you know, rice supposed to. Anyway, then after the wedding, of course, then they settle down, and he, if he has a, if he learned the trade, then he starts working as an apprentice. Either his uncle's shop or his father's shop, little simple things, you know, like shoe repair, as I said, the carpentry or tailor, and all those things.
Would he learn his, would he know different occupations, or just like one?
No,
or
just
two?
One. No, just one. He'd probably go to an uncle that has a. I was destined to be a shoe, to be a shoe repair man, you know, because my uncle had a shoe repair. He used to make shoes. New shoes, and I was supposed to have gone to the shop and learned the trade from him, you know, to watch him how he makes new shoes. They were handmade, you know, with a squeak and everything. And but happily, happily, my mother decided to come to America, you know, and she decided to take me along. Because I was supremely happy because I was, you know, my own mind, I was emancipated because I learned that in America, you don't have to fetch water from the mosque, you know, from the fountain. Because I used to dread that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I used to have a jug on my shoulder and one on my right hand, you know.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I didn't want to make a trip every day. So, and my mother said, no, I said, you're too little to carry, you know, two. I used to have a jug with four handles, which is the larger,
yeah,
and one with three handles, which was smaller. So that way I sort of balanced, you know. One up in the chair. Remind you of Rachel at the well, you know? Remember Rachel at the well?
No.
The biblical Rachel,
Rachel.
You know? She'd hold the jug on her shoulder and then supported by her hand. So when I learned that there was no carrying water, you know, she said, we're going to America. I was just...
What about your father? Was he here already before that? Or
no,
he stayed in Rhodes
for about 2 years, and then my mother, when she came here, then she borrowed money, and then my brothers were here, and so put money together and brought the rest of the family over, mm-hmm, you know, and then we landed in New York, and let's see, what else could you... Yeah, anyway, coming back to, you know, to the birth of girls, I told you the reasons why.
Uh-huh.
But then, on the other hand, the birth of a baby, you know,
boy,
uh-huh, was advertised by the all over La Juderia, you know, the Jewish quarter, used to have a town crier, announcer, you know, he'd go from house, hey, you know, Mrs. So-and-so had a baby boy, really, you know. And everybody was happy because it was a boy. You think like as if a prince had been born. You see? That's how boys were looked upon, you know. And then there was joy in the house, you know, they're jumping around and kissing each other. And first thing you know, they have... The big deal, of course, was the Berit Milah, you know, circumcision.
Uh-huh.
7 days after the birth of the baby, then they bring in the moel. That's where the moel comes in.
Yeah, right.
To circumcise the baby, you know, and the father would sit on a chair, and then they would bring the baby on a pillow, you know, laying on a pillow, dressed nice, you know, and put the baby, you know, on the pillow, on the lap of the father. See, you know, he was like a godfather, you know, that was his supreme happiness in life, to see his baby circumcised. So then they start chanting away in songs in Latino, in our Spanish, you know, in Hebrew, and chanting the prayers. It was a big deal. And then he'd go and do the circumcision. And the reason they used to attach so much importance to a baby boy being born was, number one, that the father was always anxious, just typical of similarity, for the boy to carry the name of the family name, see?
Right.
And another reason is that the boy makes part of the minyan, of the ten.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because the girl can't do it, it has to be a boy. Uh-huh. So that was supposed to be also an honor, you know, religiously speaking, which is a great honor. Because sometimes they have nine, and they say, oh, look at that, the boy there, he's already bar mitzvah, he can come and join, and then we can start the services. So if not for him, they wouldn't have religious services.
Uh-huh.
Just like in our temple. You have to wait till 10 men are there, you know, from Bar Mitzvah on. So they would come, and that's another. And then, of course, another reason for a boy is that he, in case the father dies, the boy carries on the responsibilities.
The family?
Of supporting the family, taking the place of the father. A girl can't do that very well.
Yes.
So the boy, you know, he grows up and then he carries the family name, he carries on the responsibilities of the father,
mm-hmm,
just like they do even in the United States, you know. The
role
they're supposed to carry on,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the same, this thing is from biblical times. And And then another reason again is that the boy carries on the memorial services of the, in case his father dies away, passes away, you know. When they bury the father, you know, the son is supposed to say the services. And then every year, you know, the what they call the año, mm-hmm. or the yearly memorials, the like we do here, you know, we call people to come for the mildado, what we call mildado, or the memorial services.
Right.
And the son is supposed to want the one to say the Kaddish, you know, that's the mourner's prayers, you know, Kaddish. So for all those reasons, and then one more reason why a son, a boy is preferable to a girl, is that the father doesn't have to worry about saving for a dowry.
Yeah.
See, because the son is going to get dowry, he's not going to give.
Yeah.
So if you want a girl, be the other way, see? So you have there five, six good reasons why. When it's a boy, everybody is jumping with joy. Because he's an asset to the community, to the family. But in the United States, you know, if it's a boy or a girl, nobody makes too much fuss, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a girl, the father doesn't, the husband doesn't say, well, I'm going to... You're no good. All you give me is girls. You know, he doesn't say that. He says, okay, boy, a girl, okay.
With the dowry, it only consists of, the clothing and stuff like that. Do you include any money?
Usually money, sure.
How much
the dowry is, well, depends how poor both sides are.
Oh, and what the deal is.
Yeah.
I see.
If the father just says, look, you know, I can only make a money, I got 10 kids,
mm-hmm.
and I can just barely make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you want me to do? You want me to give you my skin? I said, I'll give you so much.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have banks over there, you know. They didn't have bank accounts like we do here.
Yeah.
They didn't have charge accounts, you know. So everything was, they had the gold coins, you know, they were sashed away under the mattress or in the floor or something. So that's where the bank was. See?
I was wondering, did I... most of the homes in Rhodes, they were...